All right, good evening, everybody. Time to call to order the Town of Discovery Bay regular meeting for the Board of Directors, July 15, 2026. If you could all stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, roll call, please.
Roll call's been taken. Let the record show all members are present.
This is the time for public comments. This is the opportunity for anyone in the room or online that wants to address the board about anything not on tonight's agenda. You'll be given 3 minutes, and please understand that while we might not respond, we are listening. Terry Hawk.
Hi, my name is Teresa Hall, Terry Hall, and I live on Sandpoint Court. And I've been very concerned about the amount of dry brush throughout the city or throughout the town and along Highway 4 in the areas adjacent to Discovery Bay. And there was a particular instance on the corner of Seal Way and Discovery Bay Boulevard where the house had been vacant for some time. And there were dry weeds that had accumulated around the front of the property. I have no idea what the back would look like because all of that area is fenced off from view. However, it was very, very dry and very, very worrisome, as it obviously nobody had been to attend the lawn for some time or what was left of the lawn. And then the area on Discovery Bay Boulevard and Highway 4, across the street from the shopping center there. It's just disgusting how overgrown the weeds are, and the dry brush goes on throughout the acreage, completely unattended at all. And the area on the entryway to Discovery Bay Boulevard into our community has never looked more wretched. And I've been living here for over 40 years. It's just deplorable. And then all along Discovery Bay Boulevard, it used to be a beautiful drive through the town, and now it's disgusting. There's trash accumulating on both sides of the street, primarily as you go toward the north side or the south side of the town. And then the walls are crumbling and dilapidated looking on the sides that haven't been tended to for a long time. The countryside, country club side looks fairly good and well maintained, but the opposite side looks terrible. There's again dry brush throughout Discovery Bay Boulevard that hasn't been tended to. There's no vegetation, there's no nothing. And it's just deplorable. And I hate to see the community becoming so, it's just so awful. I've never seen anything like it. And I also thought that given this is the 250th anniversary of our country's birth, I thought that the entryway, the decorations were appalling. I mean, they'd always been so clever and so beautiful, and I just don't know what happened. I hate to see the town, you know, see, it just seems that nobody seems to care. And I finally did, you know, file complaints. I intend to file more complaints because there's still nothing done. And the kids are going unchecked on various types of electronic devices. Almost all the bicycles they're using are electric. There's motor scooters that are electrified, and there's other sources of sparks that could occur. It would only take a spark, and that would go up in smoke. So it's very disturbing and very distressing and very sad.
Thank you, Jerry. Tracy.
Hi, my name is Tracy Casamoto, and I'm here to announce that we have actively started a campaign to recall Diane Burgess, Supervisor of District 3. We will be holding petition signings throughout the district in the next 160 days. I have recently learned about the failure to compromise with Discovery Bay and its residents. She played the hero on May 19th after being served a copy of the notice of intent to recall on May 16th and pulled $1.4 million of tax measure X funds that she was going to contribute to Harbor Point Project. If Diane wants to be a hero, she should rescind the $7,441,000 $950 should rescind that developer fee waiver. She's not the hero. She's tossing out breadcrumbs to look good. Stephen, I'm not sure if you work with her or not, but I hope you fight for Discovery Bay and demand that she rescinds her commitment to give millions to the developer, taking away the option for Discovery Bay to build appropriate infrastructure. That money could have been put into the community for infrastructure. Pay attention, because she is playing this community as fools. As far as low income, she could have worked with the community to have a smaller structure, and that the town could have handled that with the lack of infrastructure. And she has abused Brentwood with her utter disregard for our community as well. Diane dished out pay raises and bonuses last Tuesday, and giving the developer $7 million in spite of the claims that they need money while trying to raise our taxes. We are to hold our elected officials into account for the manner in which they engage with our city and residents. There is always a compromise for every decision made, but she fails to do that. From what I can tell, during the last 6 months I started paying attention, is she ignores many of her constituents. Prime example of Diane's mismanagement: the county overestimated the true funding deficit from the federal health care cuts by 4 times, making the shortfall appear much worse than it actually was. Based on the inflated figure, county pushed tax measure B, requesting a tax rate that exceeded what state law permitted. Newsom didn't sign AB 1768, which is legislation authorizing it to raise the sales tax cap, until June 1st, the day before everyone was to vote. Had Diane been honest about the true deficit and calibrated the sales tax measure accordingly, she could have secured a measure that actually helped the residents in need. Instead, the measure was rejected outright, and the county walked away with nothing for the residents it claims to be helping. Thank you.
Thank you, Tracy. Amanda, I apologize. What's your last name?
Agoncillo. Hello, everybody. First off, my name is Amanda Agoncillo, and I'm so grateful and blessed to have the opportunity to represent Discovery Bay, California. Today, I was hoping to share with you my journey from my pageant, but first off, I want to introduce myself. I'm 16 years old, and I'm an incoming junior at Liberty High School. I love to play volleyball, and I love hanging out with my friends, but most importantly, I love to inspire. I am a candidate for Miss Young Philippines USA 2026, and I advocate for the uplifting of young Filipino-American women, especially those who struggle with self-worth and self-esteem. In today's generation, it's hard to be a Filipino-American, and it's difficult. Not everybody can understand my culture, where I come from, or how I see from my point of view. With that, I always used to try to change myself for other people's satisfaction, but I then learned I'm not living for them, I'm living for me. Knowing this about myself, I wanted to use my story and inspire other people through this pageant. Not only do I advocate for young Filipino-American women, but I advocate for the children with cancer and telling them that they're beautiful on the inside and out. I plan to partner with children's hospitals to spend time with children battling cancer and tell them that they are loved, they are seen, and they are heard. Most importantly, I want to remind them that everyone's beauty comes from their light they shine to others, their courage, and their strengths. Sometimes the greatest impact you can have on someone is making them feel loved, seen, and heard. Thank you so much. Again, my name is Amanda Agoncillo.
Congratulations.
I think Discovery Bay is very fortunate to have you representing us. Congratulations. Kelly, I apologize. Do we have an online that has any public comments?
There are no hands raised.
Is anyone else in the audience want to make a public comment?
I would please, sorry, I didn't turn it.
That's okay. Please come up here and introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Paul Wolfson. I'm new to the community. Thanks for having me today. I'm going to echo what these two nice ladies said in the back. Probably a lot of repetitive stuff that you're going to hear from me. Just the overall quality control of what work gets done here. Somebody's doing an effort. Somebody's out there doing the work. Just take a couple of extra minutes to dot the I, cross the T. Weed abatement. They're out there doing it. Just make a couple extra passes and do a good job. Like I asked a lady the other day, where do you live? She doesn't live here. I do. So I have to look just right across the street, the weeds that are 4 or 5 feet tall. Somebody made an effort to go in there and clean up that lot, but they could have spent 20 more minutes to just clean that up. So I just want to kind of echo, I'm here to make things better. I enjoy being in Discovery Bay. I want to bring value. I'll come more and more just to kind of see what our community is doing. And I'm here to be part of the resolution, not part of the problem. So if I can help in any way, I'd like to do that. But just want to see Discovery Bay prosper, get better. You see growth around other areas besides Discovery Bay. You know, people say, you know, live where you play. I've been here a lot of years, and it really hasn't changed much over the years. How are we going to do to make it better and make people feel better about coming here? Not outsiders, not people that really don't belong here, people that want to buy property and build all these luxurious things. That's great, but this probably isn't the community to do that. Let's focus on the people that are here and make them feel valued and appreciated first. So just kind of my thoughts. So we can maybe add some of those topics that these ladies talked about, I talked about, to the next agenda and dive into detail. And maybe the people that are doing that work could represent themselves here, so they hear it firsthand of what our concerns are. Because if the information doesn't go from me to you to them, it's falling on deaf ears. So we need everybody that has a dog in the fight to be part of the resolution, right? We don't want to be part of the problem. We want to resolve the issue. So just want to make it better. I love Discovery Bay. Glad to be here, but I want to see it prosper. So just my two cents. So thank you.
Thanks, Paul. Mm-hmm. Is there anyone else that'd like to make a public comment before I close it? All right, seeing none, I'm going to close public comments and move to the consent calendar. Is there any discussion or do we have a motion?
I'll make a motion to approve the consent calendar.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Aye. Director Graham?
Aye.
Director Porter?
Aye.
Vice President Graves?
Aye.
President Couteau?
Aye. Very good. Okay, then we'll move forward to area agencies. And liaison, Stephen, you have a presentation?
Good afternoon, good evening. I'm only going to be up here for about 10 seconds. I'm just coming up to introduce my colleague from the Contra Costa County Office of Emergency Service, Beatrice Portillo. She's a senior emergency planning coordinator, and she's going to give you all a presentation and hopefully get some feedback from you all. So, B, if you want to come on up.
Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for having me. Like Steven said, I am Beatriz Portillo, or B. I am from the County Office of Emergency Services. Today, we're going to go through our emergency operations plan, what that means for residents in our unincorporated areas, and then some general personal preparedness tips. This is our first time here in front of you all, so we're really excited to be here. Thank you. So, like I said, we'll talk about these three things, and then we'll end with some additional resources, as well as some time for questions in case you all have questions. So the first thing I wanted to address is our emergency operations plan. This is the plan that sets the framework for how the county responds, prepares, and mitigates disasters, right? When we think about what Public Works does, what the Office of the Sheriff does, our planning department, this is the plan that lays all of that out. It also tells us when we're going to activate our emergency operations center, right? Like when there's a big disaster and we need to do more. And it also says the framework for how the county is going to continue operating in a disaster. When we talk about emergency preparedness, we always tell the public, hey, you all need to have a plan for how you're going to repair. Who's going to do what, and what needs do you all have? This is the county's version of that plan, right? Any question you have about how the county operates in a disaster should be answered in this plan. One of the really important things about this plan is that it also ensures that we as a county are aligned with the state and federal requirements for emergency management. Where this becomes important is if you all remember 2023, when we had significant storm damage across the county, our alignment with those plans ensured that we were eligible for federal and state assistance, right? So if there were disaster recovery dollars or even some public individual assistance, that's all because we were aligned ahead of time. One of the other important things that this plan outlines is what each department is going to do. During a disaster, we bring in all of our county departments to work in our emergency operations center, including EHSD, our social services, health, public works. And this plan really sets everyone's responsibilities. That way, when we all come together in a disaster, everybody knows what to do, right? It's not new, and we're all ready to support. In spirit of that, we hold multiple exercises for all of our county departments. Stephen has actually been through a couple of them when he was with the county, and it allows the county staff to practice what we're going to do, right? If there's a flood, how does that change? If there's a fire and things like that. One of the things we're doing this year in our plan that's a little different than how we're doing it before is that we're really asking the public to review the plan. Because this plan sets the foundation for how the county is going to approach disasters, it's really important that we get the community feedback on, are we thinking about the right things? Are we prioritizing our hazards correctly? Are we thinking about what some of our community needs are, especially out here in East County, right? So that's really important. If you all know in a disaster or in an emergency, there's things you are concerned about, this is the time to give us your feedback so that we can start incorporating that into the plan. Another thing to note is this plan, while it sets the foundations for how the county is going to operate in a disaster, it doesn't really tell the public what to do in a disaster, right? And that's because that's not the purpose of the plan. But with that, we'll go on to the next slides where we can talk a little bit about that. When we're talking about disaster preparedness, there's really three main things that we like to discuss. One is how to be ready. Two is how to stay informed, and three is how to stay safe. So for being ready, one of the important parts is knowing your risk, right? Everyone should know the community in which they live and what they are at risk for. This really impacts how you approach your own personal preparedness, because if you know you live in an area where there's more wildfire risk, then that means during the summer season when it's hotter and drier, this is the time for you to check your kit and make sure that everything's up to date. Another thing that comes with being ready is really knowing your needs, right? You know your routine better than everybody else. You know what you need in terms of medication, in terms of dietary, in terms of what your evacuation route looks like, right? Or if you need assistance, talking about these things ahead of times really help prepare you, right? Just like the county takes a look and evaluates things ahead of time so we're ready in a disaster, it's really important that the public does the same thing. And then finally is staying informed. How will you be notified of a disaster and what you need to do? And this is what we're going to talk about in the next slides. So the Community Warning System, which is our partner office within the Office of the Sheriff, is the alert platform for Contra Costa County. What that means is that whenever there is an incident that requires action, such as an evacuation for a fire, a shelter in place for a hazardous material incident, or an avoid the area for a law enforcement activity, they're the ones who let you know what you need to do and if you are in the impacted area. One of the questions we get, especially when there's a fire or when there's a hazmat incident, people are like, hey, I saw the smoke, or, and I didn't get an alert. And that's a good thing because that means you're not in the area that's impacted, right? So just because sometimes you see what's going on doesn't mean you're in that area. When the community warning system is activated, it's again because there is something going on. So when there is an incident, typically a fire or something else, a first responder, usually law enforcement or someone from the fire department, will call our sheriff's office dispatch and say, hey, we need a community warning system alert. At that point, the dispatcher calls the 24/7 on-call duty officer for the community warning system and says, hey, fire or law is requesting an alert. The CWS officer will then confirm all the details and then sends out the alert. This might seem like a lot of steps from when the incident happens to when the notification needs to go out, but it really ensures that by the time the alert goes out, the information is up to date and is as accurate as possible. The community warning system has lots of ways to reach you, right? So even if you're not registered, we can reach you, which is a great thing, right? That's when you get the wireless emergency alert. If you've gotten an Amber alert or even a Shake alert sometimes, that's the same platform. But if you're registered for the community warning system, not only can we reach you in more ways, right? Sometimes when the alerts go out through the cell towers, they take a little bit longer just because there's so many. But we can also give you additional information. With the wireless emergency alerts, we're really limited by the federal limits on character count. But if we also have your email or your text number, then we can give you more information. So instead of just seeing evacuate due to wildfire, you'll see additional information about the incident and things like that. One of the other questions we receive is, I got the alert, but I didn't know what to do, right? And that's one of the important things, if you can take anything from this presentation, is that when you get the alert, it's because there's something you have to do, right? So when we send out a shelter in place, it's because you have to close your doors and your windows and try to cover it so no outside air comes in. When we send the evacuation warning or prepare to evacuate, that means you should have your GOAT kit ready. But also, if you're an individual who might take a longer time evacuating, or you live in an area where there's only one way in or out, like many places in Discovery Bay, this is your time to leave, right? It's always easier to leave earlier and then come back than it is to leave later. And then finally, when the evacuation order is received, this is your last call of, hey, if you haven't left by now, this is your time to leave. It's really important that when the evacuation orders and warnings come in, you listen to what they have to say. I know a lot of us like to verify information. My mom's one of those people who will call my auntie first and be like, hey, did you see it? And what are you doing? But it's really important that we listen and we follow the instructions as part of the alert. Once you've read your alert and you know whether you're staying or going, depending on the incident, it's important to remember to take either your go bag if you're evacuating or check your stay kit if it's a shelter in place. At that point, it's also the time for you to go to your designated meeting place if you've talked to your family about that. And once you're out of the area and you're safe, that's when you start making the calls and the texts saying, I'm in a safe place, this is where I am. A lot of people like to wait to make those calls and get those confirmations before they take action, but it's really important that you take action first and then send those confirmations. And one of the things, so this is our third part of our Be Ready, Take Action, Stay Safe, is returning home after a disaster. It's super important that you don't return home until after you've received the all clear and first responders have said it's okay to go back. A lot of times people are really anxious to get back home, but returning early is unsafe for you, and it's also unsafe for our first responders. Once you come home, be very mindful of damage. If it's been an earthquake or a wildfire, things might have shifted. And if you're looking through your things and you're unsure whether something's safe or not, just throw it out, right? It's better to be safe than to risk any illness or injury. If your home or your property has received damage or has been damaged because of the incident, it's really important that you take pictures or videos of everything before you begin building again or even cleaning up, right? This is one of the things your insurance is going to want to see of what the damage actually looked like. And then finally, before any other resources become available, the first thing you'll have to do is call your insurance provider and see what your coverage is, right? This is the question that FEMA and the state will ask, hey, did you call your insurance provider before you apply for assistance? So it's always helpful to do that ahead of time. And then finally, after every disaster, there will be a county news item on the homepage with information on what resources are available, and it'll be in multiple languages. So if you know there's a disaster and you haven't, hey, I don't know if there's any resources, the county website is always a good spot to check. Once you've done your preparedness plan and you've returned home, or you're evaluating how you're going to talk to your family about what disasters look like and what you need, this is a good time to engage your network, right? We all have our neighbors, our friends, our loved ones who we can talk to and talk to about a disaster, right? If you are someone who might need additional support, whether that's transportation or carrying heavy things or with your pets, this is the time to tell them, hey, I'm going through my emergency preparedness plan and this is what we should talk about. As you build out your network, it's really important that you have at least one person who knows how to access your home and where your emergency supplies are and where your pets are if you have pets, so that in case you're not able to go, they're able to take care of that for you. And finally, one of the great things is that there are now a lot of many great resources. We also have some in the back where you can get additional information. Ready.gov and Listos, which is from the state of California, have a lot of good information and graphics in multiple languages and some jump starter guides for how to plan for disasters. And with that, that is it, pending any questions, but thank you again for the time.
Yeah, I have one question. Something that I get asked a lot from residents is, do we have an evacuation plan? I don't know how familiar you are with Discovery Bay, but there's very few streets in and out, Discovery Bay Boulevard, Newport, and Bixler. Then they take us to Highway 4, and you know how that is, I'm sure. Is there any plan to come up with an evacuation plan for Discovery Bay?
So there is a plan in place. Contra Costa Transit Authority is leading that to do an evacuation study, right, of what the traffic routes. That's really the first step to developing an evacuation plan. When our plan is to approach the evacuation plan from a countywide perspective, because if we just do it for Discovery Bay, or we do it just for like the East End or the West End, it all feeds into everyone, right? So there are plans in place, but it'll be a long-term process to do it well. Thank you.
I just have a quick question. I
of course, no.
This is good information, and I like it because it tells basically how the county is going to communicate with people in the case of an emergency. But are there, as just to pigtail off of Director Graham's comment, more than likely, if there's an emergency, it's probably gonna be a shelter-in-place type situation. Let's take the example: if there's a major earthquake, there's nowhere to go at that point. So are there plans that the county has, like, hey, not just Discovery Bay, but all the municipalities within the county jurisdiction, hey, in case of emergency, here's your designated location. We're going to have X amount of resources automatically deployed to the community center. We're going to have water. We're going to have supplies. We're going to have medicines. How's all that work? Or is it just SOS?
No. That's a great question. So the way the county approaches disasters is we take an all hazards approach, right? So we plan generally for disasters. So whether it's an earthquake or a flood, we have the resources available. We do have a list of shelters and temporary evacuation centers in all parts of the county. And we do have some resources cached, right? We have additional ones we're looking to procure. We have that list and we share it with our partners, but we don't always share it publicly, just because if we tell you this is going to be your place and then this place is out of commission, right, then that leaves us in a tough spot where the public is waiting at this place that may or may not be safe. So with that, for every disaster, we evaluate what the safe options are, and then we push that out through the community warning system, through our trusted messengers, such as you all, and then we say, hey, this is the event, this is where we're going, this is what's here. So there are plans in place, but like I said, we take it a little more generally, so they're always ready to be deployed when necessary.
Thank you.
Thank you all. Yes.
Yeah, Philia.
Can I jump in real quick? Just under Mac, this is in response to Terry's comment about the weeds and such. In May, we got a call about some palm trees on Discovery Bay Boulevard. And so ConFire was contacted. They responded with remarkable speed, and the trees on Discovery Bay Boulevard were looked at, residents were contacted, and they were trimmed all within probably 8 days. I mean, it was very quick. And then after that, at that point, I was notified that there would be, from May 18th to the 20th, they'd be going through the town of Discovery Bay looking for things like that, looking for trees that are dead, you know, that are fire hazards, weeds, and dead bushes and such. So the response that I got back, actually not till July, because I was gone and then my contact was gone, and this was passed on to Dina and Steven, was they opened a total of 28 cases in town. Currently, they have one moving to work order, 17 closed, and the remainder are either at first notice or pending final inspection. So just so you know, that is, you know, citizens and obviously the board and the town, is that is something that we are concerned about. And that's about it.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right, for June, water and wastewater. Our safety and training was just basic bugs and plants. So nothing exciting there, just safety. For our water systems, we have every well online, all our filters except for A. A is still kind of being evaluated if it's even worth putting back online at this point. Our water production has definitely gone up this month compared to last, and our chlorine usage is up. And I put on the bottom just so you can see the difference in each water plant, what the chlorine usage is. You can see when Newport uses almost, well, double what Willow does.
I like the new way that looks. I may have.
Thanks. And then, yeah, and yeah, that was new.
Why do you think that uses double?
What?
You said Newport versus Willow Lake.
Oh, yeah. Because it uses more chlorine, yeah.
Well, why do you think that is?
It's the wells. Like, we know well 7 uses more chlorine than wells 1 and 2.
But what is the underlying root cause for that?
Inorganics in the water. It eats it up, eats up the chlorine, so it doesn't have as much that's active in the water to actually disinfect. So like the wells that don't have any, there's a lot more free chlorine. That makes sense.
But this is naturally occurring.
Yeah. It's all, yeah.
We had treated basically with the chlorine.
So. Yeah. Yeah, it's all.
You have to treat the water as it comes out of the well to a certain standard.
Mm-hmm.
And the water that comes out of the Willow Lake.
Yeah, each well is different. Yeah.
Treated as substantially with chlorine as the one in the
mm-hmm. Yeah, certain wells, they have different inorganics or different anything in them, you know, everyone's different. So yeah, like that, in that case, that one uses more chlorine than the other two. And then sometimes, like we all know well 6, sometimes when that's running, that one will end up using more just because of the way it is. And the storage time, how long they sit in the water tanks before they get used. So like, you know, there's a lot of different things that.
When is the chlorine added? Is it when it's in the tank and?
Yeah, it's right before it goes out of, right after it goes out of the well, right before it goes through the filters and into the storage tanks.
And is this a computer controlled application, or you guys are testing it?
Yeah, no, we have online, and it all constantly is analyzing what the dose is, and then we just manually adjust it based on what it's reading.
How long does it stay in the tanks?
It just depends. Like summertime, not very long at all, because everyone's using sprinklers, everyone's using water. In the wintertime, it's a little bit longer, but it's, I would say roughly, I don't know, a couple days, maybe.
Do we ever have to clean the tanks?
No. I mean, what? I forget every so often we have them inspected, but we clean out the backwash tanks. All right. So on this one, you guys can see that June, we use more water this year than last year, which again, is probably just the heat really, because I don't think it got this hot this time last year. And next slide. And for the wastewater, our daily flow is still 1.07, which is 46% of the capacity. Our BOD removal in TSS is up to 99.4. Our coliform did get a little high. We did have one sample that we that was high that we found out was because one of our hydraulic lines on our UV system busted. And so that causes it to come up on the coliform samples. But we got it fixed and everything was good after that. So
is that a reportable violation?
It is. And our nitrates are at 7.2. And then we actually right now today we swapped our ox ditches over. So, you know, we do that every 6 months. So we're switching from ox ditch 2 to 3 now. If that means anything to you guys, I don't know if you guys know the numbers of them or not, but.
I have a quick question on the nitrates. This has kind of been something that's new since we did the D-Nite. And I know we're still under the 10, but it, like, the last couple have been like 5, 6. So do you think there's a reason it's gone up?
Well, we've been kind of experimenting with it because we have pumps that recirculate it through. And like the faster we recirculate it, the more it works. Like it's balancing. So the faster we run it, it drops the nitrates, but it raises the ammonia. And then the slower you run it, it raises the nitrates and lowers that. So we're trying to find this, like, our almost our maximum and minimum.
That makes sense. Thank you.
Yeah.
On the capacity utilization, is it fair to basically, that means to say we could, the scare bay could double in size and.
Yeah, I mean, it's designed for that.
Kind of commits to a per household type. No.
I don't know how the engineer did it.
That number represents our permit only, not what the town can do, but what our permit allows us to do. There's other factors in it. That's just a discharge flow.
I forgot we have the discharge.
Yeah. So our actual capacity is like double that, right?
The plant can actually push 4 million gallons, our permit's 2 million, but there's restrictions in the plant before that.
Yeah.
If we need to increase the permit discharge rate, is that going to be a big deal? Or?
It changes the permit, yeah.
All right, next slide. So I know when Greg was doing his presentation, there's a few questions on the solar dryers. So I just want to throw a couple pictures and show how it's done. So the slide on the left is when we freshly, after the belt press, we put it in the solar dryers. And that's when it's like 20% dry. And then the top right is with the little mole, kind of plows it all up, spreads it out so that it can dry. And then the bottom right is when we leave it in there until it's at least 70% dry. But normally it's like 75 to 80% before we pull it out and pile it up to haul off. And then I just throw in here. So average daily, we do 12 to 15,000 gallons. And then last year, what we did was 209 dry tons that we hauled off, which we haul off once a year. We just kind of pile it up and then haul it off in one shot.
That's amazing. How much can that hold? Like you're doing 12 to 15,000 per day.
Oh, that's probably like maybe 8 of those piles. Yeah, it's not very much. And those slow dryers hold a lot.
Is that little mole guy going nonstop or?
It's actually got some program in it where it calculates like the humidity in there, the temperature, and all that stuff, and then it'll run based on that when it needs to and then it runs for 2 hours. Then it stops, and then once it's called again, it runs for another 2 hours. And it has like a whole sequence. Like there's fans on the top that blow on it. There's fans in the vent in the back that vent it. It's a process. Yeah.
I'm just gonna call it Claude.
All right, and this, yeah, last month I did the first quarter performance. This one I just did June's, and this is just the maintenance, not ops and everything. But this is just the PMs that they did. So there was 138 total of just the maintenance. And this is just showing that they were all completed within the month.
Can you give us a walkthrough of what some of that preventative maintenance is?
Yeah, on the next slide, I just kind of grabbed, sorry, I know you can't really read this on the screen.
A little too fast.
I squeezed a lot in there, but this is just kind of like a handful of like typical PMs that we get. I know you guys were asking last time, so I just kind of grabbed random ones, but I mean, for majority, they're the same. Like it's, you know, PPE, check the motor, check the temperature, change the oil, basic maintenance stuff.
So this is done every month?
Some of these are monthly, some of these are semi-annual, and some are annual ones. It just depends on what exactly it is that's being done. And you see, like, I think it's like the fourth row, it'll say PM monthly, and some of them will say PM annual. And yeah, and then we have a system that, you know, it populates them automatically so that we know, hey, this is due this month, hey, this is due by the end of like June or December, you know. But yeah, hopefully you guys can read it because I can't read that.
With our glasses.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thank you for adding these.
Thank you.
Do we have any manager reports? Do we have a general manager report?
I do. Thank you. Today, staff attended the CSDA, Alameda, and Contra Costa County joint chapter meeting in Oakley, where we toured Diablo Waters facility and Iron House Sanitation District facility as well. We also received CSDA legislative updates, and there were no updates that impact Discovery Bay at this time. The town's general manager and assistant general manager will attend the emergency communications training held by Cal OES and CAPIO on July 21st and 22nd. This multi-day training brings together leadership professionals across California for a hands-on instruction in advanced risk and crisis communication strategies. So, and that is the end of my report.
Thank you. Any director reports? Correspondences? Do we have a legal report?
No, sir.
No words of advice? Do we have any future agenda items? All right, well, 7:41. Good here.